Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Dan Christensen.
So we had to skip a week, a little longer this time, just because life and health sometimes dictate that you're just not going to get anything done that week.
Sudden attack of life, and for what Seattleites call a heat wave.
And it got pretty good. I mean,
90.
Yeah. We were going to talk about Comic-Con last week, and we're still going to talk about Comic-Con. It's just not quite as fresh. But on the other hand, we've had a chance to have things settle out, and we know what's the buzz and what's not.
Yeah. The news of what's going to have everybody getting home and then saying, oh, by the way, and...
Yeah. So the one pre-Comic-Con thing, I'm sure everyone's heard of at this point, but the weekend before Comic-Con, there was a convention in Montreal. And an artist of some note named Arthur Soydom got pretty infamous. He's known for doing zombie work. He's done work on The Walking Dead. He's done the covers for most of the Marvel Zombies comics.
That's a pretty tight niche there, but okay.
Yeah, he's the zombie guy. And yeah, he's most famous for taking famous paintings, famous covers, or other famous images, and then redoing them as zombies. So he went at a booth in Artist's Alley at this convention, and what he did was not only had his booth, but he took over three other booths around him.
So it was man-spreading only art.
Really, yeah. And it, you know, it died down about the time Comic-Con hit, but there was a lot of... He was really juvenile about the whole thing. And he was trying to blame the convention. He was making fun of and blaming the other artists. At no point admitting, yeah, I was kind of a jerk for stealing other people's booths.
Well, you think about it. Zombies kind of go where they want to, and they leave little bits and pieces of themselves where they go. So maybe it's just, you know, it's...
Sticking with a theme.
Method artist.
Well, maybe. The one thing is, apparently there is rumor that he has done this before. But the thing is, now he's going to have to be careful because he's got a rep and he has other pros in the industry keeping an eye on him. He actually got into it a little bit with Mark Waid, which nobody should risk the ire of Mark Waid in the comic industry. It's just not a good idea. And because he is not afraid to go up to people and tell them what's for and to their face.
And Mark Waid is?
Mark Waid is a really prominent comic book artist. Currently, he's writing Daredevil for Marvel. Prior to that, he's really well known for a excellent run on The Flash when Wally West was The Flash. So he's a very prominent comic artist and very vocal about supporting other artists in the industry, and he doesn't like to see people get screwed over.
Good. Good, good.
He's actually the guy that went after the artist whose name is escaping me right now, but was getting heat for selling original art at conventions, and it turned out he was lightboxing.
Oh, yeah. I heard about him a couple years ago. Yeah.
So, Waid, and interestingly, his polar opposite on the political spectrum, Ethan Van Shriver, both went after, and Ethan Van Shriver is a very prominent artist. He did the revival of Green Lantern, amongst other things. So, yeah, when those two guys are coming together after you, you done messed up.
That's where you say, sorry, folks, let me pull my head out.
Yeah. But let's get on to what actually came out of Comic-Con itself.
From there were all sorts of wonderful things and all sorts of news. So
there was the first thing I want to touch on is, and this kind of makes me happy, this is the first episode since you joined as co-host that we have not had to report comic staffs acting badly.
Yay!
It really, and at Comic-Con, I mean, I have been looking, and the closest I came to a convention horror story was somebody being a creeper at an artist's booth, and I can never, his first name is Chip, and I will never be able to pronounce his last name, but he does Sex Criminals with Matt Fraction. And so, of course, there's provocative art on the table, and there was a young lady looking at the art, and somebody came up behind her and started making inappropriate comments related to the art about her. And apparently the artist just got, Chip got right up and started creeping on the guy and scared him off.
Hey, well, you know, if that... Frankly, It's good to see people involved in the industry involved in this thing taking a step up. It's one thing for the cons to come down and say, this is a policy. It's another people who make their bread and butter going to cons, speaking up and saying, no, this is not going to happen, especially on something as delicate of a subject matter as something called sex criminals. You know, that's creep bait in some ways.
Well, now, okay, real quick, sex criminals is about criminals who get special powers based on their sexuality.
Of course they are.
So they are criminals, but they are not committing sex crimes.
Still.
They're using sex to commit their crimes. So.
Ah, thank you. I hadn't heard that one before. Well, I needed a good laugh.
But it's Matt Fraction as the writer, and he's, you know, guy who does Hawkeye. He's one of the top writers right now. Let's put it this way. It's worth at least checking out a little bit. It's very tongue in cheek.
But at least that's the only place they're putting it. Okay, yeah. Moving on.
So, like you said, a lot of news came out of the convention.
The whole Star Wars thing, frankly, is still.
You know, Star Wars, you're not going to get away from Star Wars now.
No.
We're past the midpoint of the year. Most of the studios have put out all their big tent poles now. At this stage, all roads lead to December.
Well, and frankly, it's not like this isn't now being owned by the largest media conglomerate on the planet. Let's call a spade a shovel for a minute.
Yeah, but on the other hand, the one thing that I keep thinking about is I'm having emotional reactions to what's coming out now that I never had to the prequels.
Yes.
I mean, it was like, oh, there's the nostalgia feels when the first Phantom Menace trailer came out and I heard that the low melody that accompanies Star Wars. But at no point did anything in the prequels ever make me tear up.
Yeah.
Whereas every time they put out new background stuff or new things on Force Awakens, I am tearing up. Particularly, I realized just about anything involving Han Solo.
Oh, yeah.
Seems to be getting me. Han Solo sitting down at the Falcon controls, getting ready to take off. Han Solo, we're home.
Yeah, Chewie, we're home. And every geek over the age of 40 is like...
So, yeah, and the other thing that's going on, and this was proven, you know, we've talked extensively about how much we loved Mad Max Fury Road.
Well, before we get into Mad Max.
Well, I'm not getting into Mad Max. I'm saying one of the things we loved about Fury Road was the resurgence of practical effects.
Yes.
And with Force Awakens, Abrams has gone heavily to practical effects. I mean, there is some green screen. These days, you're not going to get away from it.
Of course.
But, and we've even talked about this before. I mean, you've got BB-8, the little ball droid, is practical. The whole behind-the-scenes footage they showed at Comic-Con was emphasizing practical. Characters are actually people in costumes on set, including Simon Pegg.
Yeah, well. And they built a whole Falcon.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, a CGI of a Falcon, and it's not just a piece here and a piece there. They built a whole Falcon.
Yeah. So... Absolutely, they are knowing that Star Wars has to have weight, and the overindulgence of CGI that happened before was a mistake, and they're not going to do it.
Good. So, well, the one thing that struck me is that not only do you have J.J. Abrams, who has learned recently the value of taking handling delicately a prized and cherished franchise, but you also have Disney, and who has shown over the last 20 or so years that they can learn, and they learn at a very accelerated rate, and they saw that which was the prequel trilogy, and they realized that that was not the way to go.
No.
And to be able to, and yes, it is a very, very obvious and emotional appeal. We all get verklempt. We all get choked up when we have these things like that. And part of it's because this is something that we grew up with. And part of it is because this is Disney. They know how to pull on the heartstrings. And so do I think there's going to be any less merchandise for sale for this one when it comes out? No, there's going to be just as much stuff for sale. There's going to be just as much memorabilia available. But at the same time, they're doing it from with the eyes wide open version of saying, this is something you love. This is something that you have cut your teeth on for the last 40 years. So.
Yeah. And, now, of course, one thing that we won't know until the movie actually comes out is how good is the script.
Of course.
Now, it's got a lot going for it by the fact that Lawrence Kasdan was involved.
There's always that. And I was going to say, no matter, we may not know now, but I can guarantee you about 2 a.m. the day that movie is released, we'll know.
Yeah.
Because there will be either a grand cheer or there will be the raging of the geeks.
Yeah. And again, the odds are in their favor. They got the person who made a lot of the early Lucas films between the Indiana Jones movies and Star Wars work. So that's all looking good. And we've got, they're expanding the universe. There's going to be the young Han Solo movie where casting that part is going to be really key because we know the character. I think it's Rogue One was another one that I think we're going to see the story of how the original Death Star plans were stolen.
We get to find out what a Bothan is.
Actually, that's the second Death Star.
Oh, no?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Many Bothans died. That was Mon Mothma saying it during Return of the Jedi. This is the stealing of the plans that got into Leia's hands in the first movie. Which there's not a lot written about that, even in the expanded universe lore that they've jettisoned. So that's a wide canvas they get to paint on. So yeah, no, Star Wars definitely hit all the things. Also, Comic-Con, the motto for the last decade has been go big or go home. And apparently Disney took that one to heart when it came to Star Wars. It was the last panel of the day in Hall H.
Yep.
And first off, they passed out toy lightsabers to the entire audience.
Oh, and that's how many thousand people?
6,000 people can fit in Hall H.
Oh, my God.
And then, of course, the people in the hall, the panelists. But then they essentially had an honor guard come in, and they had the entire audience get up. And the honor guard escorted the audience to a free Star Wars concert for everyone that got into Hall H, featuring with all the, there's this great image of Gwendolyn Christie, who is, in the movie and of course is, Brienne from.
Oh yes. Brienne of Tarth. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In this wonderful, nicely cut dress, you know, she cleans up very well, shall we say. With a lightsaber over her hand, leading a group of fans to the concert with a big old smile on her face. So, yeah, they really are putting a lot of oomph behind it. But again, it's Star Wars.
Well, this is the original Go Big.
Yeah. So the big thing that was on everyone's mind going in was the number of studios that were not going to be there, you know, the lack of Marvel, the lack of Sony. And that pretty much left a wide field for Fox and Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
The result of which was all of the trailers we saw out of the convention. I mean, there were some things for others. You know, Marvel did have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and
Agent Carter. Which is no small property.
And the big thing that came out of that was the lip sync battles.
The dub smash war between, what's her name? Haley Atwell and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And what happened there. I mean, that's all of those have been collected into one video.
Yes.
And it's just an amazing video. But outside of that, it was Fox and Warner Brothers. And the thing, and it's like, one thing that still amazes me, and I think it's a case of old school thinking that just can't wrap itself around how things work, is, you know, there's this whole thing of, you know, don't record these trailers. We don't want them on the internet. You know, they're going to get out there.
Please, Briar Fox, don't throw me in that briar patch.
And that, you know, with 6,000 people, somebody's going to manage to get a video out there. And every single trailer leaked. Every single one. But it was the reactions. Now, when Marvel had a trailer leak, And it was going to be
the Age of Ultron one, yeah. Where the infamous Captain America ripping the log in half.
Yeah. And Marvel's reaction when that leaked was to put out a tweet that says, damn it, Hydra, and then actually release the trailer themselves. The idea was it was supposed to be on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. the following week, and what they ended up doing was showing the trailer, but then tagging on an extra scene because they were trying to bring people to watch the show. What you got out of Fox was, you know, people were clearly excited, especially about Deadpool.
Oh, yes.
And we're going to get back to that in a second because there's some other shenanigans with that. But people who reblogged the link, not posted it, but reblogged the link, which is usually not something that people get. They sent DCMAs.
Mm-hmm.
They sent those to people who just shared the link. A lot of people on Twitter and Tumblr were getting them just for, oh, here's the video that went up. And really the only one they should be doing that against is the original share. And there was talk about, well, if these fans are just going to keep doing this, maybe we shouldn't bring trailers. It's like, all right, you guys are getting mad because people got enthusiastic about your movies and wanted to see what's going on.
How dare they?
Yeah, and there's this whole thing of, well, it's supposed to be special for the people who are at Comic-Con. Yeah, what about the people who want to go to Comic-Con but couldn't? The people who you want to get excited? One of the people who got a takedown notice, somebody I follow, Nash Bozard of Radio Dead Air. This is somebody who has familiar with comics, familiar with the X-Men. Couldn't give two rips about Deadpool. Also a big Superman and Batman fan. Saw the Superman-Batman trailer and went, meh. But saw the Deadpool.
My reaction too.
But yeah. Saw the Deadpool trailer. And again, a character he doesn't really care much about. And he's like, oh, I can't wait to see this movie. And the result of all that enthusiasm was the studio got mad. The studios have to get around the idea that, you know, you're going to have these exclusives at the con and then people have to wait months later to see them. They've got to get around that idea. They've got to get to, okay, we've shown the Comic-Con audience. They get to see it first. Now the next day, exactly. We'll have the trailer out.
It's like the people who, I'm surprised we haven't heard about them yet, people camping out to buy tickets for the first show of a movie. Probably, you know as well as I do, there'll be people camped out for Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And they get to have that wonderful little exclusive for exactly 2 hours until the movie ends and the next group of people show up. You know, it's one thing to have that little moment of the geek bragging rights of, you know, I got there first.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to last because there's always going to be something else. And actually, while we're on the Deadpool trailer.
Right.
The thing that I'm still scratching my head about.
All right.
I don't remember how long ago it was, but there was a scene that was released from the Deadpool movie of him sitting on the overpass and jumping down and wreaking havoc on the people in the car underneath him.
Right.
And those were bits and pieces. That was spliced into the teaser trailer that they put up at Comic-Con. That was like a year ago at least, wasn't it?
And you have to remember that scene was actually CGI.
Really?
Yeah, that was well done CGI. Mm-hmm. But it was just to prove that you could do a live action Deadpool and it would be interesting. That was still Reynolds' voice.
Okay.
Doing Deadpool. It was test footage they had put together to try and convince the studio, no, really, you want to do this. And so what they did is in the actual movie, they recreated elements of that sequence in the movie. Which is why, if you look, it's different in the movie because this time they actually filmed it.
So what you're saying is this is like the little trailer from Machete in the middle of
Grindhouse
versus the actual movie that became Machete.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I was actually watching the YouTube of the Deadpool Comic-Con panel today, and they did talk about the amount of effort they put forward to convince Fox, no, really, you want to back this movie. And a lot of it was getting the fans behind it. But this brings to one of the other problems I've been hearing with Deadpool at Comic-Con. So Deadpool clearly got the best reaction of any trailer at Comic-Con. It was the clear winner. It's the one where people didn't quite know what was going on going in, but coming out are really excited about the movie. The problem is what we're hearing right now. So Fox Marketing has got these very precise plans about how they want to do things. Uh-huh. They're wanting to push Fantastic Four right now because it's coming out soon. Uh-huh. They're expecting X-Men Apocalypse to be their next big tentpole for the franchise. So they're doing a lot of push for that. And Deadpool, one of the things that stands out for Deadpool is it's going to be R-rated.
Duh.
It's going to be the first R-rated superhero film since Watchmen.
Really?
Yeah. And or at least based on a comic book franchise.
What about Ghost Rider?
Ghost Rider's movies weren't R-rated.
Oh, really?
No. But
Nick Cage's acting was terrible.
Yeah, but that's another point entirely.
Yeah.
So there's always the expectation of even a well-received R-rated movie is going to do less box office than even a mediocre PG-13. Witness Fury Road.
Yeah.
But they knew there was no way to accurately do Deadpool without it being R-rated, and that's what the filmmakers pushed for. We want an accurate Deadpool.
Right.
So Fox has set aside, okay, we're expecting this much return from Deadpool. We're going to put this much resources into it. And apparently what we're hearing is the marketing people at Fox are furious that Deadpool was so well-received. I know it's one of those insane double-think moments, but work with it.
Well, I'm just having flashbacks to, oh, you mean like Fox has never taken something that's insanely popular with a small niche of people and killed it because it's popular? It's been 10 years and I still haven't forgiven them for Firefly.
But yeah, so what I'm hearing is, at least the scuttlebutt is that Fox was surprised and taken aback. And it seems like they can't take good news.
Well, here's my concern.
All right.
So, again, to bring up something near and dear to our hearts, the Firefly franchise. It's been 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bitter. What was it? 8 years ago or so, they suddenly decided to come down and bring the hammer down on people who were making unauthorized Jane hats.
Right.
And they started losing their minds over unauthorized Jane hats 8 years after they canceled the show. Now, we've been to Emerald City Comic Con, and I've gone to Rose City Comic Con several times over the last several years. The top five cosplay costumes. TARDISes, Doctor Whos, video game characters of one stripe or another. Deadpool is usually up there.
Right there with Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Harley Quinn is also another wonderful addition to the cosplay community. But Deadpool is usually in the top five.
Yeah, in Deadpool with a lot of variants.
With a lot of all the silly costumes and making the gags because he is the merc with the mouth. I'm just wondering if Fox is going to start coming down on Deadpool fans and Deadpool cosplayers.
You know, they might try, but I think that'll be kiboshed really quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Now, to briefly touch on X-Men.
Oh, yes.
There was one thing. So X-Men First Class had its panel. It was well-received, just not as well-received as Deadpool. Especially because I think Hugh Jackman has said this will be his last time playing Wolverine.
It's, what, eighth time?
It's 16 years since he started the franchise.
We're old.
So, yeah, that's part of it. He's like, I think at this point, the only storyline I could do left is Old Man Logan. But, so they brought out everyone, and the two things that I struck out for me were, one, so Apocalypse is the main villain. Okay. Now, Apocalypse has always been a goofy-looking character. He's one of the major threats in the X-Men universe, but from his initial design, he's a very goofy-looking character. And so his representation on screen has elements of the comic book Apocalypse, but looks very different. The problem is, a lot of people are saying he looks like a Power Rangers villain in this. specifically, Ivan Ooze from the first Power Rangers theatrical movie. Fine. You know what? I'll take goofy costumes because I'm getting Storm with a mohawk, and I'm getting the possibilities of an actual really good Jean Grey and Cyclops.
Those are going to be awesome.
And Olivia Munn is Psylocke.
Well, there's that.
Yeah. But the other thing I want to talk about from the panel was, all right, so you're at Comic-Con. Fury Road has clearly been the winner this year. Lots of cosplay, lots of everything. Hall H was packed with fans, and Nicholas Holt is part of the X-Men franchise.
Oh, yes.
He plays Beast, but apparently, if you look at the video, there's a whole group of people that started, when it was his turn to talk, started yelling, "Witness! Witness me!" And took him a minute to adjust, okay, see what's going on, and he placated them by doing the V8 salute to them. And which drove everyone nuts and just got James McAvoy just laughing his ass off.
As well he should. Now humor me for a second though, because mm-hmm. Nicholas Holt about a boy,
yeah,
a million years ago, Beast in the X-Men First Class series, mm-hmm. Nux mm-hmm. in Fury Road. Isn't he also the new and improved Q in the reboot in the James Bond movies?
No, what you're thinking of is he does a character like that in a series of Jaguar commercials with Tom Hiddleston.
I'm pretty sure that...
I don't think he's the new Q. I mean, we can look it up on IMDb, but I'm pretty sure he's not.
You can slice me out of it. It's no worries.
Yeah, but... obviously his star is on the rise.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure they're going to take good advantage of that. There's obviously, we've talked a lot about... the Marvel-based stuff at Fox, so we might as well, in fairness, talk about the DC stuff.
If you insist.
Because here's the thing with DC. So let's get this out of the way. Neither of us are feeling Batman Superman yet. Not even adding Wonder Woman to the trailer this time.
No.
Could do anything. And I saw the Suicide Squad trailer, and it looked okay. But I personally still wasn't feeling it.
I was kind of amazed to see that it was... Will Smith in there.
You know, that's, again, it's the, we need a name. And that's what they decided to do, was go with Will Smith as Deadshot.
This is him saying, "I'm sorry for the M. Night Shyamalan movie that I made."
Probably. But, it's, again, we have the DC movies that, I think, again, it's the, they're using the sensibilities of Zack Snyder. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not feeling it yet. It's not happening. And that's driving me crazy that I can't be feeling it. The one thing I have hope for is the next Batman movie, because Ben Affleck's going to direct. And if we've learned anything, Ben Affleck gets the best performances out of Ben Affleck.
Yes.
Whenever he directs himself, it genuinely spins into gold. So that's the one hopeful thing, because Ben is a comic book fan and he is a good director. That tells me we might have a shot at a good Batman movie set in an actual shared cinematic universe. But for the rest of it, they got it. I mean, right now, the only thing I like from Batman Superman, the only thing that feels right that I feel they nailed, was casting Jason Momoa as Aquaman.
Yes, of course. That is hands down. They got my money just off of that first. Picture that they released of him. Can I just pause for a moment, though, and point something out, the irony here?
Well, if we pause, people won't hear the recording, so we'll have to keep
just
going.
We'll keep going, but yeah. I want to point out something here. Let us all fade back to middle school. We're geeks. We're picked on. We have our comics, and it is not a popular thing. You know? And fast forward to now, and... geek culture is popular these days.
Well, geek culture is pop culture.
Is pop culture, and it is all the movies that are coming out, all the television shows that are coming out. It's an embarrassment of riches, and frankly, it's getting a... I'm almost embarrassed to say it's getting a little tiresome. Because the Batman Superman stuff, I can honestly and truly, I think I can live a long and happy life without watching. Mm-hmm. Ant-Man came out. And I know you went to see it. I still haven't seen it yet.
Here's the thing. All right. Briefly on this before we get back to Comic-Con stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I still have DC stuff, but you brought it up, and so I want to touch on it. Here's what I'll say with Ant-Man. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Ant-Man kept to one of the most important themes that Marvel has been doing with their movies, and I think one of the reasons why their movies tend to have legs. They're not making...
Six?
Oh. Yeah. Bad. No, they're not making superhero movies. They're making different genre movies set in the Marvel Universe using superheroes. So if Winter Soldier was the spy thriller, Ant-Man is the heist movie.
Okay.
It has all heist. In fact, it directly is. It's a heist movie. It's just a heist movie where the leader of the thieves can shrink down to the size of an ant. The fact that Marvel does do different genres, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy was the space opera. the Avengers movies are the epics. Thor is the high fantasy. That they allow these different genres to happen within their universe. You know, my hope is that they have the guts to go ahead and full on make Doctor Strange a horror movie.
Huh?
That's why, but it seems that DC just makes dark, gritty movie. Next dark, gritty movie. Yes. Dark, gritty movie. It's like, so you're doing dark, gritty crime films with superheroes over and over. The only time Marvel did dark, gritty crime was Daredevil.
Which was pretty damn good.
Yeah, and that they had 13 hours to work with.
They had 13 hours. They had Vincent D'Onofrio giving the best performance of his life since Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still kind of mad he didn't get an Emmy nod for Fisk, because it was phenomenal work. Maybe second season. But getting back to DC.
Okay.
So the flip side of this is what DC's doing on television.
Oh, with Gotham.
Well, not just Gotham. I mean, Gotham is actually the least really? Of what I feel they're doing. Because I'm thinking what's happening with Arrow, Flash.
Oh, right.
And what has been called the Arrowverse because it was the first show of this continuity. But DC currently has Arrow, Flash, and then mid-season, next season, they're going to have Legends of Tomorrow, their team show. They are building their universe and they're working it very well. You know, there is different feel to the two shows, Flash and Arrow, even though they're interconnected. And Flash, flat out, was one of the best shows on last season. It's CW's most successful show right now.
Really?
Yeah.
And get to see it, so.
Yeah. Oh, you trust me. Once it gets on Netflix and you can watch it, you're in for a treat. I would say go check out Arrow because it is currently on Netflix, at least the first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And, this season, because one of the gags with Arrow has always been, well, why is he Arrow and not Green Arrow? Because that's who he's based on. And turns out what it is in fourth season, he finally adopts the Green Arrow name. Because they've been playing with the idea, well, he had to work through his stuff. and this season, Flash's costume changes slightly. It was like, people are going, well, it's not exactly the Flash costume from the comics. Well, what they showed, because time travel's element in the show, we did get a look at what the Flash will look like in the future. And it was a very quick shot, because again, Flash.
Yeah.
But the quick glimpse, and I freeze framed, it's like, that's the comic book costume.
Mm-hmm.
The future, so there... The Flash progression is watching him add the elements of that comic book costume as he's on his path. But, my problem with Gotham is the exact problem they avoided with the CW shows. Okay. Gotham's a prequel. You're always going to be handcuffed by the prequel nature, whereas Arrow and Flash are, these are the heroes at the beginning of their careers, but they're in their careers. We can do whatever we want, and it's going to make perfect sense.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's and I know that Stephen Amell, the star of Arrow, and he's got the producers on board, he feels that Constantine was not given enough of a chance. And they're pushing to get Matt Ryan on Arrow as John Constantine.
That could be entertaining.
They basically want to give a chance to maybe give some closure to that show or just show that everything's not gone by bringing him full into the CW universe and maybe playing with those storylines there. And then you've got Supergirl coming out this season,
okay,
which is on CBS, but is again from the producers who make Arrow. So yeah. And then Gotham, I mean, Gotham is almost my guilty pleasure because I watch Gotham because I'm a geek and I can't resist. It's Batman, but I watch it with an eye towards there are some, and I've said this so many times, here on the show and on articles I wrote on the site, it is a mix of some really terrific elements and some really terrible elements. And what I'm seeing from the upcoming season is that's not going to change.
Oh, well.
So, yeah. one other thing I want to talk about from Comic-Con, because this, all right, I think it's pretty well known by this time that anyone who follows Fanboy News Network that I'm really have issues with, you know, misogyny in geek culture,
yes,
treatment of women in geek media.
Agreed.
And if there's one thing I really don't like, it's fridging.
Yeah. Oh, I know where you're going with this one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you really want to see a takedown of some fridging, I recommend going on YouTube and looking up the Supernatural panel from this year's Comic-Con. I forget which of the show's writers, Edelton, I think.
If he's still writing after Comic-Con, it's a miracle.
Yeah, one of the writers for, I mean, he's one of the producers too, got questioned about the killing of a popular female character played by Felicia Day, who seems to make a career out of being fridged.
Yeah, I was gonna say, dear God, that's what, fourth time?
Third that I can count for sure.
All right, go on.
Dr. Horrible, Eureka, and this. I can't think of another one where she was out and out fridged.
Oh, okay.
Because she didn't die on Dollhouse, so.
Yeah, three's enough.
Yeah, so, but again, it was very much on Supernatural. Her death was done to motivate a male character's plotline.
Yeah.
And so the writer got called out. And the first
in epic fashion.
Well, the first thing that's really clear is the cast hung him out to dry.
Oh, yes.
The cast, I mean, the moment the question was asked, it's not that Mark Sheppard started laughing. Mark Sheppard started guffawing. And all four of them, you know, him and Misha Collins and Jensen Ackles and Padalecki, they all leaned back in their chairs. In fact, two of them turned their backs to the, yep. They all got really comfortable and basically was like, go ahead, answer it.
If they would have had popcorn, it would have been appropriate.
It would have. And, you know, the thing is that he started trying to give his answer and it was, you could tell he wasn't prepared and the audience did not appreciate his answer. And that's one of the few times I've ever seen a Comic-Con audience boo someone. And you could just see the flop sweat occurring. And this may be the most uncomfortable moment of my life. And I'd like to thank the cast for all their support.
Well, they may have voiced some opposition ahead of time. On the subject of fridging, for just a quick second,
sure.
Got to give the shout out. So the guy who does Something Positive.
Randy Mulholland.
Yeah, Randy Mulholland. Great guy. He also has this other little side project that he does occasionally called Super Stupor.
Yeah.
And he has like a 4 or 5 shot thing that totally lampshades the fridging thing.
He actually has 2 different ones fridging is something he has an issue with.
He's got subscriptions with that one, but it is just absolutely wonderful. If you haven't found Super Stupor, it is well worth your time. There's not that many episodes of it, but it's hilarious as far as the superhero genre.
Are you thinking about the one where that involves the garbage disposal?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So one of the last ones he did, not the very last one, but the two prior that he did, involved a supervillain trying to trick the Superman equivalent into killing his girlfriend.
Oh, God.
And one of the other heroes is captured and is mocking him. It's like, oh, I can't wait to see this. I'm going to hurt him. And then he's probably going to kill you. It's going to be great. So, yeah. But again, it's pointing out fridging and why it's really kind of a bad idea.
Yes.
An in-story.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's, but I think part of that, and I think part of the fans' reaction, because I can remember a time when the person asking the question might have been the one booed.
Yeah.
But one thing a lot of people said is there's a feel, and maybe it's because there has been so much vitriol lately about these issues coming from all the different harassments and such, that this year seemed to be more civil, but also there was a lot more talk about, you know, women having a place in geek culture. There was a panel at the convention. I forget what it was called, but it was about, it wasn't women in fandom because the panelists were Jenna Coleman from Doctor Who, Hayley Atwell, Gal Gadot, and there was one other person who I apologize, I'm blanking. And they were talking about being prominent women in geek franchises, and they asked Haley something, and she said, you know, that she has at least one case before called out a director for, you know, I don't really think the character actually needs to be naked in this scene to get away. And you had Gal and Jenna with looks on their face going, I've been there.
Uh-huh.
And getting that reaction. So it's the dialogue has begun, and it seems to be beginning to really take root in geek culture. I think the gatekeepers and the misogynists who want to keep the status quo, I don't think they realize they are galvanizing the majority, which is in opposition to them.
Yep.
And I think they're going to find exactly how marginalized they actually are, that they are, in fact, the vocal minority.
Yes. I think they're going to be in for a very rude awakening, because there's diversity in comics. There's diversity in geek culture, which is an awesome thing, because that's what makes us stronger.
Yeah.
That's what makes us better, because there are all these stories out there, and they can't all involve white guys.
No. So I think that's the big stuff out of Comic-Con. Although, all right, you and I had a conversation recently, and I think it's worth touching on here about Comic-Con, and that is the growth pains that it experiences. Comic-Con had about, what was it, 130... thousand?
Only 130,000?
Well, that's the capacity right now of the convention center.
Right.
And one of the challenges is that Hall H, the premier venue, the largest venue in the convention center, can only handle 6,000. So a very small percentage of the entire population. And one of the things that happened this year was you as is become common, you have people camping out the night before in line just to be able to get in to see the events at Hall H, which means those people that want to get the Hall H experience are missing out on the rest of the convention.
Yep.
There was a great article about sleeping with the cockroaches came out this year, talking about the line experience and things that Comic-Con are trying to deal with it. And you had pointed out, why can't they use Petco Field?
And come to find out, it's because, what is it, the Nerdist?
Nerdist currently basically rents out Petco Field and holds their ancillary event, Carnival, there, which everything I hear was a tremendous success. It's something where basically people who come to San Diego but can't actually get into the convention can go to this kind of thing and get some of the ancillary stuff and get some of the convention experience, which is great. But you had pointed out, hey, if the convention rented out Petco Field and turned it into Hall H.
Yeah. Well, because I only know from what I speak, you know, from actual experience, because we're familiar with Emerald City.
Yeah.
And with Emerald City Comic-Con, for the longest time, they had the sixth floor as, they called it church. That was where you went to see the grand pantheon of stars, because that was the largest place that they could find. This last year, they switched around. They did this geek feng shui thing and moved that down onto the main floor. And the fourth floor, and it was a more bare bones experience, but it got more butts in more seats. And I think there's going to either have to be some sort of thinking outside the box or something else, because otherwise, if San Diego is bringing in 130,000 and only six out of 130 get to experience this one thing, where's the...
Yeah. I mean, they are trying to do things like rooms where you can watch video presentation. It's not the same as being in the room.
Yeah.
But it's one thing they're trying.
I can stay home and watch YouTube the next day.
Yeah. I think that, because again, bringing up Emerald City, one of the things, Emerald City has been a growing convention.
Oh my, yes.
And is beginning to burst the seams. The difference is, even though it's going to be a few years till it's completed, the Washington State Convention Center is expanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're adding on to it. It's going to get an increased capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, yeah, and it'll probably fill in that space then. I have no doubt. But the problem is San Diego would love to expand their convention center, but the city keeps voting it down.
Yeah. Well, that's where there's the possibility of them moving. Because especially now that you have Disney owning Marvel and Star Wars, that I'm sure they can come up with something in Anaheim.
Well, and the Anaheim Convention Center does have more space. That's just a given. That's why Anaheim has always the leading contender for where Comic-Con would move. The thing is, though, being in Disney's backyard is usually the biggest vote of resistance. I think the idea is Disney already has enough influence over Comic-Con.
True.
The thing is, the other viable alternative is Las Vegas.
And all, and suddenly all the geeks under 21 are...
Well, and you know, that's... I mean, technically, yeah, I'm as a frequent visitor to Las Vegas in years past, I can tell you Vegas is a very child-unfriendly place.
Yes.
Because just because there's a lot of places you can't go. But if you're just there for the convention, theoretically, you should be okay.
Yeah.
But you do have that image of, yeah, it's not child-friendly. You get the hooker trading cards and whatnot. Oh. And that, I'm sure that tips a lot of people's triggers. But theoretically... the convention center is something you can get to on Vegas monorail.
Still.
So, you know, Vegas has hotel rooms. Right? I mean, logistically, it would work. But again, it has its downside, just as Anaheim has its downside.
If you want an adults-only con, that's called Dragon Con, and it's in Atlanta.
Yeah, I have nothing to counter that with, so... Yeah, you're right. So yeah, that's, but yeah, the growing pains and the fact that you do have a little bit of the other events going on. Conan O'Brien broadcast from Comic-Con this year. He did his talk show from Comic-Con because he could get all the guests.
How about that?
It was a perfect place for him. And,
when they aren't busy being interviewed by Chris Hardwick.
Chris Hardwick was the king of Comic-Con. There's no doubt. He did a majority of the Hall H panels, as the host. Plus he had, he did, one night he did his comedy routine, and then another night he did two recordings of his podcast.
What was it? Ben Kingsley, and Ian McKellen,
Okay, no.
No.
So at, Ian McKellen was after Comic-Con.
Okay, sorry.
But no, his first show was Ben Kingsley and Peter Capaldi.
Oh.
And his second show, which hasn't gone up on his feed yet, was, Tom Hiddleston and Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, he's on fire this season.
Well, yeah, he's, well, you know, he, yeah, and then this week he did get an interview with Ian McKellen, which was fascinating because it starts out with Ian McKellen talking about why he doesn't like to do interviews.
You blame him?
So, yeah, that's what's going on with Comic-Con. So the only other thing I want to touch on right now, real quick before we wrap up, just some little non-Comic-Con news that was coming around. I can't, and unfortunately I don't have my notes in front of me. But are you familiar with the, British television show Luther? So it's a detective show starring Idris Elba.
Okay. I like that.
Okay. And it's fairly popular and, it's what brought Idris Elba onto the scene.
It's Luther and not Lex. Okay. Right. I'm with you now.
Yeah. And, the producer of that show is making a push to revive an old non-BBC science fiction show from the late 70s, early 80s called Sapphire and Steel.
Okay.
And so Sapphire and Steel, and here's the thing. Hint, if you really want to watch Sapphire and Steel, it's on, every episode has been uploaded to YouTube.
Okay.
And what it was... basically a horror show done on minimal budget.
Because the BBC knows no other way.
Well, this wasn't BBC, so, you know.
Because British television knows no other way.
But it starred David McCallum and Joanne Lumley.
Okay.
And they played extra-dimensional beings who would be sent to Earth every time there was a breach in time threatening existence.
Because that never happens.
And... or as one person put it, you know, there was a breach in the universe that was going to let horrible eldritch abominations in. And our only hope were the friendly abominations who came to Earth to stop them. And your best hope is they're deciding that killing you isn't the best way to stop the breach.
Okay, then.
But the thing about Sapphire and Steel, it took advantage of its low budget. It had an almost gothic horror feel to it.
So it hints at, and rather than...
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, the Lovecraftian hint, don't full show, and imply the horror. But
without all that awkward anti-Semitism and racism.
No, yeah, without that. And the other thing is they were very slow, deliberate paces. Again, they were gothic horror in their pacing. And a lot of people, and if you watch the episodes, you realize this show gets really disturbing really quickly. And it's one of those things that would be easy to dismiss as cheap and slow paced. But if you take the time to watch it, you realize they're kind of brilliant. And, so they're talking about this producer wants to bring the show back. Now the question is, can he recapture those great elements that in part came from utilizing the limitations at the time? I hope that if they do it, they can get, David McKellen and Joan Lumley to do cameos.
Of course.
Actually, that does remind me of one last thing, because I brought up David McKellen. When I went and saw Ant-Man.
Okay.
There were trailers, of course.
Of course.
And they had two trailers back to back that I was like, well, that's a jarring change. Because the first one they showed was Comic-Con Superman Batman trailer.
Yeah.
And again, my feeling, meh.
Yep.
And they immediately followed it with Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yes.
And the reason it's jarring is both movies star Henry Cavill.
Oh, okay.
And it's watching Henry as Superman. It's like, again, I'm not feeling it. Watching him as Napoleon Solo in a Guy Ritchie film, I'm like, this, on the other hand, works great.
Yeah, this is bring it.
And Hammer may finally get the breakout role he's been waiting for, since it clearly wasn't Lone Ranger.
Yeah, no.
But he's
Ilya Kuryakin.
Yeah,
awesome.
Well, and the thing is, I'm realizing he looks a little like McKellen did when he played Kuryakin, and even though Carvel's obviously much taller and broader than Robert Vaughn, I realized you're copying his vocal patterns.
Yeah, well,
you're doing Vaughn's vocal patterns as well.
Because James McAvoy didn't do a 4-hour Patrick Stewart impersonation.
So yeah, so it's. But it's that difference of, so, you know, clearly Henry Cavill can act.
Oh, yeah.
He, when given the chance and a director that's going to let him. Not that he was never the problem with Man of Steel. He was never the problem. He was actually really good casting. He needs a better movie built around it. But as Man from U.N.C.L.E. is showing, because yeah, here he is in what's looking like a good movie. And I'm like, yeah, it probably is the next movie I'm going to go see in the theater is Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Huh?
When it comes out, because it looks great. And again, it's that trailers have a job. Trailers should make you get in a position where you can't wait to see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, Superman, Batman is failing because I'm looking at this going, I'm just not feeling it. I'm looking at Man from U.N.C.L.E. Can I have it now?
Yeah.
How about now? So,
well, I have to say, thinking of the trailers and whatnot, because I remember a couple months ago going to see a movie of some stripe, and I saw a trailer, and it looked good, and it looked fun, and it's like, I want to see this. This looks like a great premise. And then Adam Sandler showed up in it, and it was Pixels.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. If you haven't had a chance to see it, the wonderful, what's his name, Cinema Bob?
Movie Bob.
Movie Bob. The Movie Bob rant is totally unsafe for work, but you can feel the vein in that man's forehead. There is no way in God's green earth I want to go see Pixels.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The trailers never grab. Here's the thing. I realized somewhere along the line, I have never paid to see an Adam Sandler movie.
Keep it that way.
And, well, I am going to break the rule because I did see one at a friend's house. There was one Adam Sandler movie I enjoyed, but he was only partially responsible. And that was Hotel Transylvania.
Okay.
And that's because you had Grindy Tarnowski from Dexter's Laboratory and Powerpuff Girls directing from a Robert Smigel script.
Isn't that the same one that got you to shave your beard so you could be Frankenstein for Halloween?
Because my goddaughter wanted to go as the characters from that. Yeah, yeah. But the sequel's coming out, and I really enjoyed the first one, and the second one looks just as good. And it's going to have Mel Brooks in it.
Oh, I'm there.
So that's my exception to my Adam Sandler rule. And in general, I was reading a thing recently. I guess the original script for I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Oh, no.
I guess the original script for that was incredible. I hear it was a really good movie and a really good premise, and it was a hot script going around.
And then Adam Sandler got a hold of it.
Yeah, but exactly. It landed in Adam Sandler's lap and got Sandlerized. And we got, and now here's the thing, his early work, I mean, Happy Madison and The Waterboy, for their era, they were, you know, having eventually seen them, they were okay, but that's also before they got, he kind of got into the rut of playing the same character all the time. But now, I mean, yeah, Pixels, it was like, and here's the thing, because I've been reading the reviews and the movie about stuff, and the thing that gets me is the premise is so stupid, and there were ways they could have taken the basic idea of Pixels and made it work really well. Mm-hmm. They just didn't. But the thing they want me to accept is that, so Kevin James' character in the movie.
The president
of the United States, and Adam Sandler is his best friend from childhood who works a Geek Squad-like job.
Of course.
Which, you know, I that's realistic. You know, not everyone who's going to be the, not everyone who's Barack Obama's friend from childhood has government jobs. That's just not, it's not how it works. But the idea
is, not according to Snopes.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just that whole premise and.
Oh, come on. I was upset with seeing Peter Dinklage in a mullet, for God's sake.
Okay. Let's be fair. Peter Dinklage has not I love his work. He has done some great work. Station Agent was a great movie. I love him as Tyrion Lannister. Not all of his movie choices have been stellar.
Okay, this is something important I have to ask you. Knights of Badassdom.
And I counter that with Underdog.
Fair enough.
He played Simon Bar Sinister in Underdog.
I thought I had forgotten that. Okay.
Well, that's what happened. And yeah, that's what I mean. No, Knights of Badassdom was, again, a movie that, because it got taken away from the director and recut, that's why it didn't work.
Well,
I bet if a director's cut of it came out, you'd have a much better movie.
There's going to be a director's cut of Dune again.
So we really have to wrap up, but one last little thing, and it's all your fault. You just brought it up.
Mm.
But, of course, Daniel and I live in the great Pacific Northwest.
Yay.
And, Daniel is a more recent citizen of our great region, having moved here, 15 years ago?
It will be 14 in September.
14 years ago. So Daniel didn't live around here when Twin Peaks was being produced.
Yes, but I saw the ramifications even as far away as Salt Lake City.
So, you know, the fact that they are gearing up to do the Twin Peaks revival, and David Lynch was just in the town of North Bend recently, checking out how the town has changed since they first produced the show, making sure the cafe was still there, which fortunately the cafe in North Bend has become a Twin Peaks shrine.
I was going to say, it's still there because of Twin Peaks.
Yeah. And, but yeah, they're gearing up to do the new season, and they are going to film around here again.
Excellent.
So, you know, it's funny because back then I was just trying to start getting into acting in the area, and I never could quite get on that or Northern Exposure. Now that I'm out of acting, they're coming back in again. I don't think I'm going to try. But you know, who knows what's going to happen?
Anything's possible. Now, I still remember the first time I was at University of Utah, and there was a whole column in the classified ads in the school newspaper of people saying, I need the VHS tape of this episode. I you know, and it's like, good Lord, that is fandom to a new and deeper scary level.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But with that, I think we're at a point where wrapping up is probably a good idea.
At an hour.
Again, if you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us a line at our website, www.fanboynewsnetwork.com. And we will return again in about 2 weeks. Until then, thanks for listening.
See you later.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network, and is copyright 2015 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.